Okay, we're recording now, and everything looks to be where it needs to be. And this is really basic information. I'm interested in your experience as a Native person, kind of where your sensibilities are about Native tradition. I'm interested in you in general, your background, and how you maintain traditional beliefs and activities and maintain a balance with kind of contemporary life, working, kids, school, all that kind of stuff. I'm really interested in how Native people kind of, as the saying is, walk in both worlds, mm-hmm. because so many people do. And I'd like to know more about how you pass on your traditions to family or other people, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay.
So, Michael Dunn, this is June 3rd. We're at the Paul Sawyer Library in Franklin, Kentucky, and it's about 10 o'clock. And you have agreed to record this for the Oral History Project for the Native American Heritage Commission, correct?
Correct.
Great. Tell me about yourself first. Just tell me what you want me to know. Tell me who you are.
I'm a native Hoosier, transplanted down here in Kentucky.
We won't hold that against you.
Well, that's good. Oddly enough, my family, originally both sides, my mother and father, their families, weird way this worked out, both came from Virginia, down in through North Carolina, down Orange County, North Carolina, then up through Kentucky as the progressives came through. And it's almost like they followed a similar path. Stayed here in Kentucky for a number of years, then moved up into southern Indiana. It was almost like they just weaved in and out. And then finally my mom and dad met up. And we've always had a connection to Kentucky. Farthest way I guess we've been was 50 miles from Kentucky. So southern Indiana, I guess, considered it part of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So born and raised in Indiana, up around Paoli, Bedford area. Mm-hmm. Went to school in Indiana. Spent most of my life in Indiana, spent some time in northern Ohio. That's where, oddly enough, that I discovered that I do have a Native background. I guess I was about 9 years old. You know, since we'd agreed to do this, I was starting to think, you know, when did I discover? I remember sitting in a parking lot of a grocery store. We just got back from buying some groceries, and Kellogg's used to have these cards on the back of a grocery, on a cereal box. And they had Native Americans on there, you know, famous Native American chiefs, and we used to collect them. And they had Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Tecumseh, and I was just drawn to Tecumseh for some reason. And I was talking to my mom about it, and she said, he's a great chief. And she started telling me about him. I said, well, how do you know so much? She goes, well, believe it or not, you're Native. I said, what? And she told me a story that when she was, I guess, about 12 years old, she found out that her grandmother received a letter from the state of Virginia that she had to sign some papers. And these papers were to transfer ownership of some land. And that land was held under Thomas Rolfe, Thomas Rolfe being Pocahontas' son.
Right.
Come to find out, my grandmother's a direct descendant from Pocahontas. And that got her interest in genealogy. My grandfather was, whoa, what's going on with this? So he started in genealogy. They started tracing things back for the last 40, 50 years. And come to find out, my grandfather had a direct link, obviously, to Pocahontas. He found out that his wife, my grandmother, had a direct link to Pocahontas. When my mom married, she found out that my dad's mother had a direct line to Pocahontas.
Wow.
Again, going back to that interweaving with the families. And there are some like 8 different lines back to Native American ancestry. And from then on, it's it's been that my father unknowingly would teach us some of the Native American, I don't know what you would say, just not beliefs, but how to look at life.
Okay.
His father was brought up with the same beliefs. Mm-hmm. His mother was, even though she was very religious, in the Methodist, which again follows almost a Cherokee pattern, her grandmother was full blood, so she followed that pattern, and her grandmother, her grandmother was married to a Methodist minister,
okay.
which her father was a Methodist minister,
okay. uh-huh.
and so it just followed a pattern. So it's been with us ever since. You mentioned earlier about how to bring everything together. I was baptized Catholic, and that seems somewhat odd, because my whole family was either Baptist or Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take something so organized like Catholic and so ritualistic as Catholic and this kind of thing, and then look at the Native aspect of it. It's odd, because Native is almost an individual type thing, at least for me it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt that the relationship between God, the Creator, mm-hmm. and an individual is an individual thing. I didn't fit into real well with the Catholic aspect of it. I guess the real turning point for me was in Desert Storm. We were getting ready to kick off on our attack,
uh-huh.
and I just had a feeling that it's hard to explain. I was sitting in my tank, and a feeling just came over me. It was almost like I was all alone in the tank, and I hear a voice that, you're going to survive. Your people are going to survive. And then when you get out of this, you've got to do what you've got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Be there for the people. And I just had an odd sensation. It was just like I was not there in the middle of the Saudi Arabian desert. I was in the middle of the woods. And then I hear a crackle on the radio and stuff. We kick off, and I just stayed with me. So when we got back, I told my wife about this experience. And when we got back, I started searching for anyone who could teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And we've made some contacts and such. And from then on, it's just like Creator's guided me to certain individuals to learn to speak. And it's been a phenomenal experience learning how. And I guess it comes down to balance. You can look at the modern aspects of life,
mm-hmm.
But not make judgments on other people.
Yeah.
And keep that in mind, that it is an individual thing. As long as you keep in perspective what you have to do, and you treat people with respect, and hopefully command respect, not mm-hmm. demanding respect, but
right.
be respectful towards others, and people be respectful towards you.
Mm-hmm.
I try to convey that to my kids. My son is very Catholic. He grew up Catholic. But he has been able to do that as well. He seeks out knowledge
mm-hmm.
from elders. Jennifer, you know Jennifer, she does that as well. So I think we've been successful in that respect. I teach, and I take that belief and that understanding to my students, and they seem to be doing real well with that. And I'm not trying to push a certain religion or a certain belief
mm-hmm.
to my students, but it's just an outlook of life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough sometimes.
I can imagine.
But it's done me real well. I feel comfortable with it.
When you spoke of your father kind of passing on to you kind of worldview, I guess, maybe, or how to think about dealing with people from kind of a Native perspective, was it was it he was teaching you something his father had taught to him, not connecting it to nativeness, or connecting it, overtly saying, this is the way our people do it, specifically talking about native people. And the reason I ask that specifically is I'm interested in many people come into a native sense late in life, not as children. And I think that path kind of coalesces in different ways. It's they've learned things over their lifetime, but they haven't pointedly learned them as native knowledge. It's been, oh, that's just the way our family does it, without speaking about it being a native kind of thought process or event or whatever.
It would always be something like your grandmother or your grandfather always told us this. And you mentioned later in life, when my mom did the genealogy, that grandmother they always mentioned, or that grandfather they always mentioned, that teacher, mm-hmm. would always be the one that had that Native American ancestry.
Okay.
So it was almost in an inadvertent way that it was the Native aspect of it. Mm-hmm. They were the teacher, so to speak, of the family. So it wasn't something that was directed towards the Native. It just ended up being that way.
Mm-hmm.
That those were the ones that people would listen to, that everybody looked up to and admired,
mm-hmm.
for having that outlook on life.
Do you have brothers or sisters?
I do have a brother and I do have an older sister.
And are they also interested in their Native heritage? Do they follow Native tradition or incorporate it into their lives like you do?
Not near as much. My brother, oddly enough, works out at a casino out at Red Wing, Minnesota.
Okay.
He worked at the Sac Fox reservation, uh-huh. for a while. Then he moved up into Minnesota on a reservation with a casino. He tries, but he is he is very strict in his outlook on life. It's got to be black and white. There's no variation there.
Uh-huh.
So he has a hard time with it. He tries. My sister, she doesn't know where to go. She'll be over this way one time and another the other way. She has no direction at this point,
mm-hmm.
but she is actively trying to learn.
Mm-hmm.
She's seen where it's taken me. She's seen where it's taken my mom and my dad. She's had some troubles in her life, so she's trying to redirect.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my nieces and nephews don't accept it near as much. They're more into the high-tech type things, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
the modernization,
right.
rather than going back and learning the old ways,
mm-hmm.
which I keep trying to tell them, if you look to see where this modern stuff comes from, it's always going back to the old ways. It's the same concepts, the same thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start somewhere. It's at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. When you speak of going back to the old ways, are they specifically the East Coast, Narragansett, Pocahontas' folks, or are they Native tradition of a variety, or how do you figure where things come from?
I've been, well, like I said, when I came back from Desert Storm, I've been trying to learn as much as I can. I've looked at and talked to many elders from the Lakota. I've talked to some people from the Ojibwa, Shawnee,
mm-hmm.
and just any elders I could, just to learn. And it's hard to discover anything from Pocahontas'
right.
time, obviously.
Right.
But and I'm glad of this, is the one that really speaks to me is the Cherokee. With Cherokee heritage, I would hope it would. Yeah, I just feel so comfortable that it's almost like it's a calling. And my wife and my family and I went down to a vacation to Virginia Beach, and we decided we have a few extra days. So we went down to Cherokee, North Carolina. We'll just go down, just check and see. This is the summer I got back. And we went down into that area, and it just felt like home. It's hard to explain the feeling when you walk or drive through that valley. Mm-hmm. And every time I've gone back, I'm home. It's like it's a calling. Mm-hmm. And so that's the one that really I'm more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And again, it's hard to learn some of the ways because of the vision of the Cherokee, the Eastern and Western, right, and adaptation and such. And that's one that even the Cherokee people today have a hard time dealing with. Mm-hmm. Which tradition and how far back do you go with? Well, it's, to me, it's one that speaks to you.
Yeah.
The one you're more comfortable with. Right. So.
Kind of resonates with your own soul.
Exactly.
When you returned from Desert Storm and you spoke to your wife about your vision, and I'll call it that, what was her response? Is she Native?
She is not Native by blood, but she's been adopted by, oddly enough, an elder who is, I hope I say this right, Potawatomi. Mm-hmm. And Tlingit,
okay,
elder. And she went through the adoption ceremony, was named, and she's adopted by a clan mother from the Cherokee. So, and she's very, very proud of it, very honored of that. Mm-hmm. She actively seeks and learns, and together, I'm proud of this too. She tries to teach our children the same. Mm-hmm. She was raised Baptist, so. And she's not that religious, but with the Native aspect, she has adapted that, and it resonates. Like you say, it resonates with her core beliefs and the way she feels. So she understood, and she supports me in everything that I try to do.
Mm-hmm. Within Kentucky's kind of history the information that's kind of come through the commission of the divisions among the Kentucky people, how do you feel about the disparity between federally and state recognized people and those who are not or who do not care to be recognized one way or the other? How do you see that whole thing?
I'm not sure.
With like you said, the division in the Cherokee, mm-hmm, you know, you have federally and state recognized Cherokee tribes, and then you have groups of people who claim Cherokee heritage or membership in Cherokee tribes who are not state or federally recognized, and there's this friction between the two, mm-hmm, between especially federally recognized and those who are not federally recognized, whether they're state or not. How does that impact kind of how you teach either your students or your children, how you feel about your own connections? Does it matter whether you're recognized by somebody else or not?
Not to the extent that some people would think. Again, going back, I know who I am. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I would like to be recognized as Cherokee. I know a lot of people here in Kentucky would like to be recognized for who they are. It's all about an identity. Nobody likes to not be known who they are. I teach middle school, and one of the problems we have in middle school age children, they don't know who they are, and that's what they're trying to strive to find out. And our people here in Kentucky, I think, had the same issue to a point. As far as recognized, I think one of the core problems we have is a cultural type thing in that we're trying to find out who we are, learn the ceremonies and the traditions, but there's no one here who is willing to teach. And so we have this amalgamation, I guess you could say, of, well, trying to do the right thing, but we don't know what it is. And you have a lot of confusion. I think if a lot of the federal recognized people would understand that there's a lot of mixed blood individuals who want to learn the ways and want to be known as Native peoples, not for any kind of monies, not for any kind of, I don't know, to make them feel special or anything, but to know that, that speaking with them, then I think they would be more accepted. Unfortunately, money gets into it, and I think the federal recognized tribes tend to think that, well, they just want the money. But if we can make a connection to the federal recognized, that's not the issue. We want to learn the culture. We want to learn the traditions. We want to learn the ceremonies to perpetuate and keep the culture alive. I think that could help get the money issue out. Just keep it away. And there are going to be some people here that are still going to want that. But I think at the forefront has got to be the cultural and the education. And I think we have more people in this state, at least that I know of, that want that. And I think through the commission, I think it can work as long as we keep that focus. And we get everybody on a commission and everybody to focus on that and work together. I don't care if it's Cherokee, I don't care if it's Shawnee, I don't care if it's Apache. If you look at all the nations and all the tribes, it's the same core belief. It's just different ceremonies. Everybody has a different way of doing things. Again, it goes back to what I said. It's an individual type thing between you and Creator. So the message would be the same, but how you present it is going to be an individual thing. But I think it can work, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of understanding and patience.
Through, from the time you were nine and had that talk with your mom to your adult life, did you ever feel that your connection to Native heritage set you apart and that other people recognized that and either celebrated that with you or kind of denigrated that?
A little bit of both. I am not quick to make a decision. That's one thing I learned from my father, my grandfather. Quiet. I like to think that's part of that upbringing. That I've always heard that's part of the being Native, not to make a quick judgment, to think upon it. That's stoicism, I guess. I don't tend to be loud or obnoxious. I hope not, at least. Some people tend to think, well, you know, he's stuck up or something like that. So that could be a detriment type thing. And it's helped in a lot of ways because people would come and talk to me because I would have this reputation, I guess, of being cool in demeanor. My wife would... have the opposite opinion sometimes, but at the same time would be that standoffish type thing. And I hope I'm not standoffish, so. I don't know. I'd have to leave that up to an individual type thing of what they felt. As for me, I'm proud of it, that I can look back and all the lessons I've learned that my father, my grandfather taught me, that I use every day in life. I pray daily, two or three times a day. It's not, God, let me get through this day. It's not the normal ritual that some of the elders teach you, but it is a ritual. I do follow a ritual to the best I can. I like to think it's the right way, at least. He said that you're doing fine, keep it up. So I'm comfortable with it.
There have been a couple of folks that have talked to me about growing up, they felt out of place. And when they got to a specific geographic location, like you said, when you drove into near Cherokee or down that valley into Cherokee, that it was a sense of homecoming. And you expressed that when you talked about your trip. Has that sense changed on if you've taken repeated visits or going into other areas, or is it the history of that area? You said, you know, spoke to you. Do other areas speak to you also?
There have been other areas that you get a sense, a feel. Kuala being one, obviously. There's a powwow that we just happened to fall into a few years ago up around Carrollton. It was way back in the woods, just a little gathering type thing. It wasn't publicized. We went out to, and for some reason I had to go up into the woods, up above the powwow grounds. So I listened to the little voice inside my head and went up, and I just sat up on a hill, and it just so comforting. There's a couple places up in northern Indiana I've gone to powwows that you had to get away and just sit and just watch and listen. Mm-hmm. Up in Tunnelton, where I grew up, there's a place I used to always love to go to as a kid that it would draw you there. Mm-hmm. And you just sit and listen and just, I don't know, for lack of better terminology, experience what was surrounding you.
Mm-hmm. And you said you passed this on to your son and daughter. Is there, and you said that the information that you've received came through your family, but you've also sought information and knowledge from outside of your family, from other mm-hmm. tribal people. How do you decide what to pass along, when to pass it along, and who to pass it to?
What to pass along would be if I feel that it's right. You hear a lot, and someone may speak something to you, and it's just words. But if somebody says something to you, and it sticks with you, and you just, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You got all these pieces, and you try to put them together, but there may be that one piece that just slides right in, and you keep that piece. When to pass it on? Again, it's just a sense of when it needs to be passed on. It's, I mean, there's things I want to tell my son now, but he's not ready. There's things I need to pass on to my daughter, but she's not ready yet. Mm-hmm. And the time will come, and I'll know when it needs to be passed on. Mm-hmm. There are questions in my mind and for myself that I keep asking myself, and trying not to be impatient, I keep reminding myself, when the time comes, I'll know. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of patience and being, and I'll know.
And recognizing that mm-hmm. time. How about to whom? Is it a family kind of connection, or have other folks come and talk to you, whether they're asking for information regarding Native tradition, or whether they need advice from you because you're a cool guy and a good guy to talk to. How do you decide to whom you pass along Native knowledge?
Again, it really depends on if you feel that person. I've had some great teachers. Nighthawk Troutman, Paul Barber, Frank Cook. I've learned from each one of them. Mm-hmm. Mom Feather, Helen, that you can tell their heart when they ask, how they ask. Not just the words, but the way they present themselves when they ask. And the words may be serious words. And it may be a serious question. You can see it's a serious question. But again, it may not be ready for you to know these things. And the time will come, and then we'll be able to pass them on. Mm-hmm. You've got to move from point A to B to get to C. Let's not jump from A to C. Mm-hmm. When you get to B, then we'll let you know. So you need to grow a little bit before then. Mm-hmm. It's just something that's you get a sense to. You get a feel for.
And you've spoken numerous times about that feeling, whether it's about a person, about timing, about place. And I'm connecting to Native tradition of warriors, of fighters, and your being in Desert Storm. Did you make a connection when you went into the service with being a warrior in Native tradition?
I don't know. My family has always had someone in the military, every generation. My generation didn't at that point. And I just felt the need. I don't know why. I had a college education. I was on my way and this kind of thing, but I felt the need. I had to go to the military. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I got to be an officer. I don't know. But I do know that it fit. It filled an emptiness that helped make me who I am. Mm-hmm. My son, he's 16 now, and he's got the whole world open to him. He's great academically, he's got a great mind, he's thoughtful, this kind of thing. And he too is planning to go in the military because it is a family tradition, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. It's a calling for him. So I don't know. My mother, when she was looking back at the genealogy, as best she can tell, and this is hard to do, is finding the clans of the Cherokee. My father was Wolf Clan. No, my father, yeah, Wolf Clan, and my mother's with Burr Clan. Burr Clan being the messenger. Wolf Clan, from what I understand, being a warrior. So I don't know. I don't know how that would, if that was consciously or subconscious.
Did you make connections when you've asked other folks for knowledge or to teach you or to advise you? It sounds like it's with a very purposeful direction toward learning more about Native tradition, and then your timing of when you ask and when you receive, you know, is not always up to you.
Right.
Yes. And that, you also mentioned the fact that you have to be patient waiting for either the time to come for you or the time for somebody else. And in that kind of waiting, what do you do?
I used to be very impatient, and during that time when I have a question, I would try to read. Unfortunately, you get a lot of misinformation in books and such, and you try to read more and read more and read more, and then eventually you get so mixed up and you forget about it. Well, I'm never going to find anything. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, you get a phone call or you meet someone, and then they'll give you the answer. And I forgot all about that. I had that question, and there it was. It was there all the time. Mm-hmm. So during that process, I'd learn to be patient. Ask a question, the time would come, it would answer me. So I just asked the question, and what did you find the answer? It'll come. I've learned that patience. So I just continue on to do the best I can and just wait.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a lot of what you've learned is very, is not only spiritual, but it's kind of an ideology. It's thoughts and ideas and training to kind of behavior almost. What about the more, I don't want to use the term practical, but everyday, and what I'm thinking of is when you were growing up, foods or music or ways of doing things that you see maybe around the house or that you recognize your father or your grandfather doing, that were ways of doing things, practical things, were in Was any of that connected to Native tradition, or was it overtly said, well, like you said, this is the way my father used to do it, and it may be, I don't know, doing something around the house. This is the way we did it. This is the way we put out a garden. This is the way we plant trees. This is the way we cook something.
With the garden, my mom was more like, you know, you got to go by the moon. And it's got to be a certain time of year. You went to this frost. She would go out. She would make her own. She would not go buy burpee or anything like this. She would keep her own seeds. Mm-hmm. She was one that's got to wait till this moon before you put the potatoes out and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. My father was more like, you're not going to waste that. You can do this with it. He always planned ahead for any kind of extra whatever. Mm-hmm. Foods were all the basics, the beans, the corn, just we called it good home cooking. Mm-hmm. Nothing fancy. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to discover later on that the stuff we ate when I was a kid was all Native foods. The beans, the corn, the squash, stuff like this. Yeah. And I went, whoa, this is good stuff. Yeah. And I like to tease my wife, she's Italian. And, you know, the Italian tomato sauce and all this. I said, hey, you guys wouldn't have that at one for us. And
yeah.
So I was amazed to discover that. And I tell my kids that at school all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you like pizza? You wouldn't have it, man, if one. So I try to make those connections, and they find it pretty interesting.
Uh-huh. You said that you did have a garden, and I meant to ask this earlier. Where you grew up, was it more urban or rural?
It was more rural.
So you had, obviously, some land that you could put a garden
yeah.
on, and you talked about places where you would go and kind of that drew you when you were a child. In that setting and today, you live in an urban or rural area?
Urban.
Urban. And how do you transfer that information? You say you talk to your students and I guess mm-hmm. your kids too about what you all grew growing up. How do you transfer that knowledge with the change in kind of surroundings?
We go on drives. There's a little place where we live now. It's a little valley in with a creek, and I always go down there every once in a while. My son, I'll find him down there every once in a while. It's a nice little creek. We go to the state fair, and I'll tell them the stories about growing up the gardens and stuff. And they eat the traditional foods. Mm-hmm. You can't break those habits.
Yeah.
So
don't want to break those habits.
Exactly. They loved the stories when I was a kid, so they understand that. I guess we treat them every once in a while with those stories, treat them with some of the foods. They love going to visit my father up in Indiana, back in the country. We keep that connection as best as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're looking at me with big blue eyes and blonde hair and this very strong sense of nativeness. How do you respond to people that say, you're not native, you don't look native? How do you respond to that?
Well, I'm bald, too. And that's not supposed to be a native aspect, either.
Thank your grandfather and father.
Yeah, that's true. Looks are deceiving. You can't go by looks. My biggest thing is, you know, everybody's heard of Crazy Horse. Everybody's heard of Tecumseh. Tecumseh had lighter colored eyes. Crazy Horse had lighter colored eyes. Little Turtle, a lot of people haven't heard of him, one of the greatest chiefs of the Miami people, was bald. You know, that's not a racial characteristic. That's a genetic characteristic. So that has nothing to do with it. I know many African Americans who have light colored skin. So that has nothing to do with it. And I think that's one of the things that I teach science as well. So we go along with the genetics. And a lot of my students are astounded to hear that that's not what is a racial characteristic, but it's a characteristic. It's not something that makes them who they are. So, I don't know. It's never bothered me. Mm-hmm. So,
frequently the folks that I've spoken to, they go into schools. You're in the school all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But purposely, they're asked to come into schools to speak about Native culture. And frequently when you go in, I guess it's the stereotype of, and this too comes from inaccurate histories about what Native people are supposed to look like, and that term supposed is always
right.
problematic. But when, do your students recognize you as Native? Do they ask you questions about being Native, or, you know, about that part of you? Or is it something, it's just you?
They do. I make a point of telling them about my background the first week of school. I try to ask them about their background and make a connection with them. So I tell them who I am, where I come from, this kind of thing. When I teach my sociology or social studies, I do geography, talk about American history a little bit. I bring in my Native flutes, I bring in drums, I take about a week. I wish it would be more than that. And I'll just give them some background, each section of the country, and I'll tell them about the peoples who inhabited the Northeast, Southeast, and go on and introduce them somewhat. Mm-hmm. So they're aware of who I am and what I am.
I know that your daughter is very connected to Nativeness, and you said your son is but not, maybe not to the extent of your daughter?
Oh, he's getting more and more, okay. More and more.
Now, who's older?
Jennifer's the oldest. I've got a middle daughter. She's not as much. She is spiritually, but she doesn't go out in the community as much. And then John, he's getting more as he gets older. He doesn't speak a lot. He keeps a lot within himself.
Mm-hmm. And your students at school, have any of them made connections to you because of your Nativeness?
Yeah. Quite a few of them, actually. I just had one who just, the school year just ended, he felt really connected. He just found out his great-grandfather was full-blood Cherokee, and he looks African-American. I say looks, you know, he's right. The dark skin and such. But he started talking to his father more about it, and he is learning more and more about his Cherokee heritage. And he's fascinated with it. He wants to follow on with it. And that opened up new doors for his father as well to learn a little bit more about it. Mm-hmm. So it goes back to what I was saying earlier. If you learn about it, you would learn more about yourself.
Right.
And maybe some of the feelings, maybe why you look upon things the way it is. I'm a firm believer that the way I am, there's a reason now. Part of my journey, I talked to, now this is only on the phone, I was speaking to some people, and they told me to get a hold of this one guy, a Choctaw elder, and just out of the blue, he gave me a call one day, and we just started talking, and he said, so you're Native? I said, yeah, I'm part Native. He goes, no, you're Native. I says, well, you know, I've only got so much. He goes, no, I'll tell you what you do. Prick your finger, put that little drop of blood into a glass of water. You see a color? I said, yeah. You would think so. He said, well, that is. Now you go ask someone else to put that. Is that going to change color? He says, no. He says, it's in the blood. All the people's blood are the same, but you have that spiritual in your blood. It's who you are. It's not the blood that makes you, it's that spirit in the blood. It's that tradition. It's the way you are. Mm-hmm. You know, German is going to be German. Italian is going to be Italian. Cherokee is going to be Cherokee. Choctaw is going to be Choctaw. Mm-hmm. It's that spiritualism that is part, and it's innate in who you are. Mm-hmm. And that just, wow, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And it spoke, and that's the way it feels.
When you were asked to, if you would accept an appointment to the commission, how did you feel was it an opportunity that the time was right for you was the timing right?
First of all, I'm incredibly humbled and honored. I hope so. I hope that I can bring something that can help the commission do what the commission needs to do. I feel strongly with what the commission's mission is, and hopefully I can do anything I can, and I will do anything I can to further that mission. I don't know how to answer that.
Okay, that's fine.
I just want to do what I can.
Yeah.
To help everybody.
You said sometimes you share stories with your kids, and the information that was passed from your grandfather to your father to you, you'd share with your children. Limited is not the word I want to use, but how formal or how with regard to when you tell stories, how you tell stories, what the stories are, is there a framework that you use, or again, is it when the time's right and it strikes you, or you know, some Native peoples tell stories in the wintertime and only some stories are told only in wintertime? Or is it more kind of the family connection of, oh yeah, that reminds me of when? Kind of, and those stories kind of blossom.
It's more with the timing type thing, if the timing is right. Mm-hmm. Or trying to make a connection to what you're trying, the point you're trying to make. Mm-hmm. Most are along trying to keep things in balance, keep things in perspective. Don't let anger or anything try to overtake you. Story about one that I've used was the rattlesnake. You know what you're getting into when you pick that rattlesnake up. You know it's there.
Yeah.
So why pick that up? So those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
I've, with literacy, they always talk about the myths and the folk tales. And the first book I pick up is I start talking about and read to them some of the folk tales and the myths of the Cherokee. Or I've got a couple books and read to some of those to them. Just to get them another angle of type things. And we discuss those. It just depends on what's there.
You had said that your nephews and nieces are more kind of technological. They're in today's society. I mean, how can you almost not be? But and you said they don't necessarily want to go back to the way things used to be done, the old ways. That, how do you connect? How do you maintain the old ways? When, I mean, the simple move from rural to urban, the disconnection with family members kind of real close to you. I mean, you have folks still, I guess, within a fair drive. But the old, maintaining those old ways, or at least the knowledge of those old ways today, how does that work?
It goes back again to my dad's teaching, keep things simple, keep them humble.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets too involved and you start getting too wrapped up, it can follow your thinking and you get too spread out there. You got to keep things simple to where it's easy to think of. I don't know how to explain it. It's you can only juggle so many things. So you try to pick the important things.
Mm-hmm.
All the other things, you know, they come from here. And that's what you got to keep whole.
Mm-hmm.
If things get too far out of balance and out of whack, you're going to lose it all.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to keep control of what you can control. The ones that are important.
Mm-hmm.
Like family life. Okay, if you spread yourself out too thin, you lose your family. what else do you have?
Right.
So you're trying to keep the family.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while branch out and this kind of thing, as long as that's intact. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it.
So it's not so much of the old ways of living and doing, but it's the ideas, the psychological aspects of the old ways, and not necessarily the
actual
utilitarian
yeah.
ways
it,
of the old ways.
Right. It's the concept,
mm-hmm.
The balance. Obviously, you move from flint to steel.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes more sense as long as you use it in the same, what it's used for, what it's needed for.
Mm-hmm.
That's the advancement. People say that the old people were savages. Well, for their time period, no, they weren't. They were advanced. Otherwise, they still wouldn't have been around.
Right.
If they didn't advance and adapt to their surroundings, they still wouldn't be here.
Right.
So that's advanced thinking in my mind,
yeah.
in the simplest terms.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to advance, we have to adapt. And I see nothing wrong with that, even in these modern times.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say this, I don't have an MP3 player. You know, 20 years ago they were, but I still listen to music, I still have a computer, and that's, you'd be foolish not to adapt to some of these things, to be able to reach out and some of the stuff we're learning today of the old ways, we wouldn't be able to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be able to educate
right.
if we didn't have these things to use them to our advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we got to keep in mind those old ways are important to pass on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how you would put it, but I just try to keep everything in perspective.
Do you also seek out kind of learning about some of those things, like flint, or like some of the making or the doing? Does anybody in your family produce native, you know, beadwork or featherwork or any of that?
No.
Is that something that is that kind of separate from where your interest is, or simply because it's just not yet?
It's just not yet, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been interested in the artwork or the artisan type things. I'm more interested in the ceremonies, the traditions, the cultural aspect of things, the thought processes, the reasons why. I'm not very artistic, so I know where my limitations are. But I do like to think and try to work out why. I guess that's the educator in me, I don't know.
Yeah. And do you see in your family, the generation above you or two generations up, was there a knowledge of those types of things that you said, you know, that's not for you, but were other people in your family interested in that or produced those types of things?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, my mom was a great cook. I guess that would be,
that's a good art.
My grandmother used to sew and make clothes, but nobody would pick up on that.
But nothing that would have been like overtly
no.
kind of a native connection.
No, other than the gardening, that would be about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything more? We've kind of gone across the board. More that you want to tell me that I haven't asked, that I haven't kind of.
The only thing that I would like to push forward, basically, is the whole concept that you touched on when you were talking about the commission, is that we've got a lot of people here in Kentucky. A lot of people don't realize how many Native peoples we do have here. And I say Native peoples, I don't mean full-blood, quarter-blood, or Native peoples. Go back to that old Choctaw, you have one drop, I firmly believe that you're Native then. Whether you live it or not, you're Native.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the Lakota way, there's not the Cherokee way, there's a Native way, and that's an individual type thing that we need to pull together. If you're going to get the recognition, if you're going to get the support and the understanding, we need to pull together. We're our worst enemy right now because of different things that separate us, just small things, and we overlook all these things that hold us together. Our core beliefs, our history, our cultural identity is the same. Maybe different villages and different and things of that nature, but the core beliefs are the same. And we need to emphasize that.
One last question is, as you just said, you talking about native ways, you have to live it. And do you make a distinction between folks who follow the philosophy and kind of the ideas and those folks who only have the trappings of? Do you know what I mean? Some folks,
they dress up and play Indian.
Yeah. And then some folks, you know, follow the philosophy or the ideology of Native ways of doing things. How does that work?
Again, it's a feel. When you speak to people, you can almost tell that they believe in it, that they live it. Others that, I don't know, it's almost like a reverence. You know, I hate to bring this up. It's almost like Christianity. You have your Sunday Christians, then you have your everyday Christians. You can tell the way they behave, the way they act, the way they speak. Mm-hmm. You go to powwows, you'll see the weekend Indians, and you'll meet the Native peoples. Mm-hmm. And you can tell. And it's out there, it's open-ended, I understand, but I don't know how to express it.
And it's interesting that it's not groups of people, it's by individual.
Mm-hmm.
that you make those connections. It's individually, it's not the Choctaw, as in every Choctaw person in the world, but it is individuals.
Right.
Okay. Anything else?
No, ma'am.
I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.